Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Some in Utah say that mountain lion predation of mule deer may be unduly reducing the deer population, which may reduce opportunities to hunt deer, along with attendant economic benefits. For this and other reasons, a five-year state-backed mountain lion removal study is ongoing across six Utah hunting units. And the Utah legislature changed mountain lion hunting regulations in 2020 to allow unlimited year-round hunting. Utah Mountain Lion Conservation opposes these management policies and practices, saying they threaten a vital keystone species, a natural balance, public safety, lifestyles, traditions, and livelihoods. We're going to talk about it today. Our guests include Utah Mountain Lion Conservation founder Denise Peterson. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And Aaron Johnson, who's a houndsman and advocate for ethical cougar management, is with us as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's start with mountain lions, just who they are, what they are. I was reading a piece that one of our reporters at UPR did, and they quoted you, Denise, saying that, I learned something here, that mountain lions are, I guess, the biggest of the small cat family, so more related to your house cat than to a lion.
Yes, maybe. Very much so. So they're the biggest cat that can purr. So okay. If anyone tells you that they can roar, which is a characteristic of the big cat species, the two true big cats, they're pulling your leg. Mountain lions cannot roar. It's not possible. So, yes, they are the biggest of the small cat family, and they're actually really quite incredible.
Yeah. How big do they get? How big can they get?
So females, I would say weight-wise, 80 to 120, 130 pounds,
yeah,
give or take. Males can get a lot bigger. So 130 to 170, and if you get really lucky, even bigger than that, 180,
yeah,
200 maybe.
Right.
That's a big cat, even though it's a small cat.
So you don't want to tussle with a mountain lion, but I guess a key point to outline here is that mountain lions don't really stalk, or humans are not their prey.
Correct. They don't see us as prey.
Yeah.
And if you think about it for a minute, how many people are up in the mountains every single day? A ton of them. And you almost never hear about mountain lions, but they're around us all the time. And so I think to their credit, that's a true testament to how well they actually do coexisting with us. Unfortunately, though, every once in a while, a situation happens where, you know, a person runs into a mountain lion and it's perceived as scary, and sometimes it can be. But it's rare, and usually there is something that triggers that kind of response. So they're incredible cats, and they do a great job of coexisting with us, and they're actually pretty cool neighbors to have if you think about it.
Mm-hmm. Now, I guess a big worry of the people, and this has been somewhat sensationalized in the media, I think you would say, there have been people killed by mountain lions, but not that many.
Yeah, it does happen, and there has never been anybody killed in Utah, as far back as we know. And so I think we're 30 or less people that have actually been killed by mountain lions in over 100 years. So not very many. Mm. It does happen. Yeah. And it's very sad when it does. Like, I do not want to dismiss that in any way, shape, or form. But it's important that we really remember that while we perceive that there's a pretty significant risk with mountain lions, it's actually a lot lower than most people would even think. Because again, so many people are on the mountain every day, recreating, just getting outside, and there's no conflict.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You may have seen this. There was a video posted somewhat recently, right? And as I was reading through some materials from your website, this seems like pretty typical behavior from this. It was a female mountain lion with, do you call them cubs or what? What's the?
Technically, they're kittens.
Kittens. With her kittens. And this hiker, whatever, he was filming this, which you say don't do. But anyway, we'll get into that. And she would kind of do a kind of a fake charge. Show aggressive behavior, but didn't attack him.
I know exactly which video you're talking about. And we actually did go out and film her after that whole thing, and we watched the kittens grow up, which was super cool. But so that was defined by the media a lot as stalking behavior, but that was not stalking behavior. And so what had happened was Kyle, the trail runner, had actually, he was out there enjoying a beautiful day, and then all of a sudden there were kittens on the trail, and he's like, I'm going to go film the kittens, which you don't want to do. They're on the move. They're vulnerable. And so mom saw this threat to her kittens, and she went into defensive mode. And so her big goal was to just get space between the person who she perceived as a threat to her kittens, and, you know, the ultimate goal is to keep the kittens safe. Mm-hmm. So all she was trying to do was get space. If you saw that behavior where she was like slapping the ground with her paws, she was stopping herself. At no point did she actually want to attack the person. She just wanted space again. Mm-hmm. And so when something like that happens, just leave the phone down, because if you just stand your ground, yell at the cat, act big, and just throw something, because you noticed as soon as he threw something, that cat took off.
Yeah.
You know, and just respect their space.
Right.
But it's also important to remember on that note, though, just because you see a mountain lion doesn't mean it poses a threat. And that's why we talk about learning the body language and behavior of cats, because the narrative for so long has been, oh my God, I see a mountain lion, that has to be scary. I've seen over 40 now, and I've never had a negative encounter, and that includes going in on den site chicks for a study. And so if we can learn how to read the cat, and if it's just sitting out there on a hillside watching the world go by, there's nothing wrong with just enjoying it. Mm-hmm. It does not have to be scary.
They're
wild animals, mm-hmm. and we have to give them respect, mm-hmm. the same as we would a moose with her calf.
Yeah.
The same as we would a bear with her cub, the same as we would a mom at the grocery store with her two little kids. Mm-hmm. If you or I walked up to them two little kids and started to interact with them, maybe that mom at the grocery store would be like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. You know, and so I think I agree with Denise. This mom was just defending her cubs. Mm-hmm. Give her the distance, like we should all wild animals. Remember they're wild and give them distance and respect them, and we won't have a problem with them. 99.999% of the time.
Yeah.
So what if we do have an encounter that's a little too close? What should you do?
Leave your phone in your pocket.
Yeah.
Act big, I think, like Denise said. Yeah.
Act big, okay. Key, hands know, over your you know, for head or something.
Yeah, act big, mm-hmm. you know, yell, scream.
Keep kids close.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think the literature that I've read, and what I would do is just try to act big, wave your hands, mm-hmm. Make it more, you know, scary for them.
Yeah.
Because they are very conflict averse, mm-hmm. and they're actually pretty skittish.
Yeah. Yes.
And so if you look like you're a threat to them, they're more than likely going to take off.
And keep eye contact, back away. Is that?
Keep eye contact, back away slowly. Mm-hmm. Just give them your full attention.
Yeah. Now this would be very, very rare, but what if the lion does attack? What do you do then?
Fight back.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Unlike the, I guess, the advice for a grizzly bear, which that's a much bigger animal. I guess you can fight back against a mountain lion.
You could try. I mean, you're so strong, okay. But you're definitely going to get injured.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the rare case. You know what I mean?
I guess we emphasize that. Very rare. You can usually get out of an encounter. Okay.
Yeah. All right. I've been working with these cats for over a decade now and on two continents, and I spend... And Aaron does too, an incredible amount of time in the field with these cats. Like, we're literally tracking them. You're out there pursuing them, and we are in their space. And it's just one of those things where it's like lions have had a chance to come after me if they wanted to, but they don't want to, right? They're just out there living their lives, and we just need to recognize that.
Yeah. Somebody turned to you, Aaron Johnson. You're a houndsman.
Yes.
Which I didn't really know what that was. I guess you use hounds and hunt.
Yes.
That's what you do? Okay.
Yeah, I'm a hunter, outdoorsman, conservationist. Mm-hmm. I enjoy the outdoors, and I raise hound dogs. You know, back east, the hound dogs are used primarily to track or tree raccoons. They have the tournaments and all that type of stuff where the red fern grows.
Yeah.
Out here in the west, we've used those same hound breeds to run and trail and tree mountain lion, bear, bobcat, things
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, yeah. So basically predators. You're hunting predators mostly.
Yeah. I do enjoy that. I also mm-hmm. hunt deer and elk and birds and everything. So
yeah,
fish.
Yeah. Yeah. How'd you get into that?
I had a cousin that was a government hunter. I always looked up to him. He had a few hounds, and as a young kid, I kind of idolized him. I always wanted to hunt, and when I got older and got my own place and I could buy my own dog or whatever, that's when I bought my first hound and started to do it.
Yeah. So tell me what a hunt is like. You're out hunting a mountain lion or a bear or whatever. You got your hounds.
Well, we're talking about mountain lions. So what the houndsmen do is we go out in the mountains and we look for the tracks. Primarily, I would say, 90% of the mountain lion hunting is done in the winter with the houndsmen because they can find the tracks in the snow easier. You can find them in the dirt, and there are several people, dozens, hundreds, that will maybe go a horseback or just hike through the mountains and look for the tracks in the dirt. But primarily the mountain lion season in Utah has been in the winter. And so you look for the tracks in the snow and you try to find a track that's fresh. If you find a track that's a week old, that mountain lion might be in a different county.
Mm-hmm.
And so once you find a fresh track, you release the hounds on it. And the idea is the hounds will trail it up and jump it and then run it to tree.
Yeah. You go out certain times of year, I guess?
Yeah. Primarily, I go out in the winter, mm-hmm. but you can hunt them year-round.
Yeah.
Just might be a little bit harder, in the dirt or whatever.
So which mountain lions are you pursuing? That old, young?
The law stated you couldn't pursue females with kittens.
Okay.
Obviously to protect the kittens. And so as a hunter, obviously people would primarily pursue the older ones,
mm-hmm.
Looking to harvest those or just to photograph them.
Yeah,
I don't kill them anymore. I've killed some, and mm-hmm. I'm not opposed to killing them. But nowadays I shoot a camera. That's how I.
Yeah,
I just do it for the dog work and to be out in the outdoors.
Right.
And enjoy the animal.
Yeah. So tell me about what you've learned about mountain lions from hunting them.
When I first got into mountain lions, I believed somewhat like what Denise hinted at, that mountain lions were bad and we need to kill as many as possible to save the deer and save the world. But after hunting them and being around them, I've realized it's quite the opposite, that they're very limited in numbers, that they don't kill the number of ungulates, and they don't pose a danger to people. And I think with most conservationists, most hunters, once you start hunting a species, you gain a huge respect for that species.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's happened with me at the mountain lions. Once again, I'm not opposed to hunting them. And I'm not opposed to people protecting their flocks or themselves. But I think that they should be managed, but they should be managed with science. And so for me, I just chase them for fun.
Mm-hmm.
Like I say, for me, it's the dog work. I enjoy the hounds. I enjoy training the hounds and raising puppies and spending time outdoor with my family and friends. I love seeing the wildlife. This is a way where I can see mountain lions. I can tree them. I can photograph them. I can release them unharmed.
Yeah. So Denise Johnson, you capture them on camera.
I do.
Right. So these are trail cameras, motion activated. What do you do?
A lot of them are trail cameras, mm-hmm. but if we get really lucky, we actually get to sit in a blind and just film them for multiple days at a time. And one of my favorite memories was with a family of cats that we actually ended up spending most of a February with. And it was one of the coldest experiences that I've ever endured. But it was amazing because we just posted up in a blind and these cats just hung out in these rocks and we had a chance to just sit there and film them and observe them. And, it was just one of those really special moments in life. But, yeah, for the most part, we go out on the mountains tracking, looking for sign. Winter, again, like Aaron was talking about, is the best season because you can just go out there and, there are footprints. Let's see where you went. And so I put trail cameras out there everywhere. And I use that footage that we get from these cameras to teach people about mountain lions. And that's why I originally founded Utah Mountain Lion Conservation, was to teach people about mountain lions.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are so many people out there doing just incredible research, and that's so important. But that wasn't the road I wanted to go down.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to address the social concerns, because so many people, when they hear a mountain lion, the first thoughts that come to their mind are scary, terrifying, all of the things. But through our trail cameras, we've gotten to really know them in a different way. And so we wanted to use the footage from those trail cameras to show people, this is what your mountain lions are actually like. This is how they behave. And let's have a conversation about this. And maybe, you know, learn how to coexist with them a little bit better.
Before we talk about coexisting, maybe a little more on the behavior. I was reading from your website, solitary hunters, but they do have social, I guess, hierarchies or social interactions. Tell me a little bit more about that.
They do. So it used to be thought that mountain lions were very solitary creatures, right? But as people started running cameras and doing collared studies, all of a sudden we started to learn more about their social networks. And so mountain lions have actually been found to share kills in a way that it was defined as reciprocity. Anyway, so if one mountain lion shares a kill with a different mountain lion, even if they're not related, researchers have found that that same mountain lion that they shared a kill with might actually share a kill with that other cat at a later date, which is pretty cool. And then through our trail cameras, we've actually documented that here as well. Not necessarily kill sites, but as recently as this spring, I documented two mature females that spent about 2-3 weeks together just traveling. Very definitely mature. One was older, and then the other one was a mature cat, but they just spent that time together traveling and just hitting multiple cameras, and some of the clips they were actually playing. So it's just one of those things where, yes, they are social or solitary to a point, but they're also more social than we once thought.
So you state that mountain lions increase an ecosystem's health and biodiversity. Tell me how.
So through their presence alone and through predation, what they do is they actually help keep prey species on the move through, again, presence only, because what that does is it creates what's called a landscape of fear. And so if deer sense a mountain lion in the area, they're going to be more wary and they're likely going to move on from that space. And what that does is that prevents the deer from overgrazing in that area, which if they're permitted to stay in these spaces for too long, they can browse the cover way down, which can affect smaller species that rely on them for nesting and cover and forage opportunities. So it helps promote biodiversity from that standpoint. Their kills also feed a multitude of different species. So it's like McDonald's, basically, on the mountain. So if a mountain lion makes a kill, we've actually filmed foxes coming in, bobcats coming in, coyotes, golden eagles, all sorts of different species, and the insects that feed on them too nourish the entire landscape, right? But mountain lions also, there have been studies that have shown that mountain lions help limit the spread of chronic wasting disease, which is a very dangerous disease for deer to get. And if it gets into a herd, it can be very hard to get rid of, and it's fatal. So there have been studies that have found that mountain lions do target deer affected with chronic wasting disease. And let's say that a deer does die that had chronic wasting disease. As a mountain lion consumes it, their digestive tract actually breaks down the prions, which limits the spread. And so a big question, and I see opportunity for research here, is how much do mountain lions limit the spread of chronic wasting disease? And so one of the things that I would suggest that we do here in Utah is maybe run a study where we can actually evaluate, like, how much are they actually limiting the spread? So we can make more informed decisions about, like, how hard do we actually want to hunt our mountain lions here? And, like, how much of an ecosystem service are they providing by limiting the spread of this disease?
Let's take a break. When we come back, I want to get into how do we manage mountain lions. There's a debate, and we'll have that debate here. Both of you take issue with how the state is currently managing mountain lions. So we'll describe how the state's doing that and then what you think is wrong with that, and get into how best to, you think, manage this predator. We are talking about mountain lions, obviously. We're talking with Utah Mountain Lion Conservation founder Denise Peterson and with Aaron Johnson, who's a houndsman and advocate for ethical cougar management. We'll have more following this break. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're talking about mountain lions on the program today. We've talked about mountain lion biology, encounters with mountain lions. Maybe later in the program we'll talk about what how to protect pets and domestic animals. You have some stuff on your website for that as well. I want to get into mountain lion management now. We're talking with Utah Mountain Lion Conservation founder Denise Peterson and with Aaron Johnson, who's a houndsman and advocate for ethical cougar management. So I want to quote here from a news story from our own reporters here at Utah Public Radio. Utah Division of Wildlife Resources says mountain lions are killing about 7% of total female mule deer population. They say that's enough to suppress population growth. That's based on GPS collar data on deer. And they cited that as Utah lawmakers changed mountain lion hunting regulations in 2020. So a few pieces of the management plan that you guys take issue with. I guess that would be a place to start. Would be, do you folks feel like too many deer are being killed by mountain lions?
Well, I'm going to let the deer hunter answer that.
Okay.
I don't. That's a personal opinion based on hunting and being out in the woods or the mountains. Historically, mountain lions were not protected, and they were even bounded way back in the 50s and 60s and kill 'em all mentality. And then I think as we developed a management system across the West, Western United States, to limit the harvest, whether that be, sell a license and manage on a harvest objective or a limited entry number of permits. And I think that most states agree that's the best way. And it was managed that way forever. As a member of the RAC in Northern Utah in 2019, the DWR stated we had more mule deer in the state of Utah then than in any time in history. They said it at the RAC meetings, they said it at the Wildlife Board meetings. Well, we were managing mountain lions differently then. They were limited entry hunts. A very small number were killed. We had harvest objective units where just a small number could be killed. If the goal of the division is to increase the deer numbers, how did we get to that in 2019? We were definitely managing predators different back then, more conservatively back then. And now we've gone the opposite, where we're managing them very liberally, kill them all basically, or as many as you can in an effort to bring up deer numbers. I just question is that really going to help? I mean, we didn't do that in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
I would bring up at the time, and I think that most hunters, speaking to the hunters out there in Utah, the number one best place to kill mule deer in the state of Utah is the Henry Mountains. And I bring this up to the hunters and the conservation groups and the biologists, from whatever time frame, 2015 to 2020, it's the premium place to kill mountain lions in the state of Utah. Well, look at the number of mountain lions they kill on that mountain range each year. I think it's like an average of 4. So how can we have the very best deer hunting in the whole state of Utah, maybe the Western United States, and we're killing very few mountain lions like that? Tell me how that's possible. Maybe killing predators is not the very best way to manage ungulate populations. And I think there's plenty of studies that have shown that. And so both species, ungulates and predators, need it managed. Both need to be hunted. I'm an advocate for that. I don't think that killing all of the mountain lions is going to bring back the deer. And I think we can kill too many deer, too.
Mm-hmm.
We could flip the script, right? And we could kill all the deer.
Right.
I don't think that that's the right management either.
So there's a question of, I think most managers would agree that, mountain lions killing the weak deer and the deer with chronic wasting disease and et cetera is a positive thing. But has it become additive? Are mountain lions killing deer that would live healthy several more years?
Sure, sure. So do hunters, right? Like the reality of it is a predator is going to kill to eat, and a mountain lion, a bear, a coyote, they're going to kill something to eat if they can and survive. We are too, as humans, right? We kill the deer to eat. We kill the elk to eat. And so I think that we have to come to a balance, a science-based balance on what's the best way to manage it. And some units, maybe you need more predator control than others. I mean, that can be discussed and debated, and some you don't. And so I think that's the big question is what's the very best way? And I don't think that this question of predator management, is it the very best way to manage, has not been asked before. Mm-hmm. I think there's several studies out there where different states, Canada, have done studies on the mountain lion. What does it do to deer populations? And I think the best one that I've read was, you know, a mountain lion may consume so much pound of meat, you know, per week or month. That doesn't have to be a deer. You know, what if they were to kill an elk? Mm. What if they were to kill a coyote? What if they were to kill a beaver or something, as long as they're eating? And so to say that mountain lions are the sole reason we don't have mule deer, I think is foolishness. I'm a hunter first. If we want more deer, maybe us hunters should kill less. Mm. I'm not an anti-hunter.
Yeah.
But how can you say I want a lot more deer, but I want to kill them all too? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Or I want to kill many, many more. There has to be a balance there,
yeah.
Right? And that's the job of a conservationist, to recognize that and be okay, you know, letting the deer live if there's not that many.
Mm-hmm. One thing that's cited is if there are less deer to hunt, less hunters out there hunting, then that has economic effects. I wonder what you guys say to that.
Sure, 100%. Could say the same if there's less mountain lions out there. There's less mountain lion hunters. Mm-hmm. There's less, you know, bird hunters or whatnot. But hunting does bring in an economic aspect, especially to rural Utah, right? Where maybe that's where it's primarily done. And I think it needs to continue. Mm-hmm. And hey, listen, if we can increase our deer herds, we'll increase mountain lions. Mm-hmm. And I think that both Denise and I are for that. Mm-hmm. Let's do it the very best way.
Absolutely.
If the DWR is so concerned with the deer population that it's decreasing, why are they increasing deer tags across the state? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a common sense question that they struggle to answer to anyone. Mm. Our deer numbers are in trouble. Our deer numbers are in trouble. We're going to increase tags by 400 in this unit. Mm. That doesn't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm. So you guys are taking issue with a couple of state laws, right, that expanded the hunting of mountain lions to basically unlimited, right, in
yes.
six units. Yeah. Has that's been in place since 2020, so we've had several years. Has the mountain lion population decreased?
100%, yes. It's decreased incredibly, scary low. I don't find the number of tracks. I don't find the number of mountain lions out there. The mountain lion population is as low as I've ever seen it in 25 years, and becoming scarcer. And so that's a concern for me. Let's not make this a species extinct. Let's manage it properly. We can have deer and mountain lions together.
Yeah. Are you seeing the same thing? Decrease
yes.
in mountain lions?
So we've been running cameras since 2017, so not nearly as long. But in that time, we really dialed in some of the areas that we were filming. And the cats, we could set clocks to their movement patterns, right? So we knew every couple of weeks we'd be having a cat coming through. And so in 2020, HB 125 was signed into law that put probably about 60% of the state into unlimited hunting. But we didn't have like open season like we're having right now. And we still, you know, movements were still pretty consistent for the most part, but we were also not operating cameras in areas that were unlimited at that point in time. But then 469 happened, and that's the one that stripped away any meaningful protection for mountain lions. So unlimited year.
This HB 469 passed in 2023, I'm
23,
reading.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. And so that one opened mountain lions to unlimited year-round hunting, trapping, snaring. No bag limits, no nothing. Kill as many cats as you can find, and you didn't need a permit anymore. And so just anyone with a general hunting license could go out and take a cat. That's when we started really seeing the change happening in our own backyard. And so all of a sudden, you know, cats were showing up with trapping injuries. Like I had one cat that I'd been filming since 2019, and she showed up missing half of her paw. And I watched that cat starve to death over the course of winter, which was brutal. And that's why, like, I support ethical hunting, where, like, if you're going to go out there, let's have a quick humane death. You know, that's great. Fine. But what happens is, you know, when we have unregulated hunting like this, like, cats start disappearing, and they start disappearing fairly quickly. So I'd had areas where I'd been filming behavior and just these amazing interactions for years. And I knew that the cats were always around. And then they started slowly disappearing, and all of a sudden, areas where I'm like, I knew I could go out there and sit in a blind and film a cat, all of a sudden, I haven't seen a cat in there in over a year, which to me is a big red flag, because it was just one of those areas where you knew that you were going to get good stuff out of there. And the fact that cats are just no longer coming through to me is deeply concerning.
Yeah.
I think the data, too, would suggest that the population's decreasing. Maybe we didn't, but we touched on, like, the DWR uses mortality data to try to decide or decipher the population numbers. And that is if you're harvesting younger mountain lions, then theoretically, you know, biology, the number of mountain lions is going down because there's not as many old ones. And I think the data would show that Utah's primarily harvesting mountain lions that are under 2 years old. And that's indicative of a decreasing population. Also, another factor is if you're harvesting more females, that's going to hurt the population more. The same as if you were to harvest more female deer, you're going to hurt the population more. If the goal is to kill all the mountain lions, I think Utah's achieving that goal.
Yeah.
That's the part I have issue with, is I don't think that that's necessary, and I don't think it's going to have a meaningful effect on bringing their deer back. There's so many other factors that affect mule deer population, by far more than a predator. And I think they know that. I just think this is the one thing that human beings think that they can control.
Mm-hmm. And the thing to remember, too, with this kind of heavy harvest, you know, talking about, you know, taking females. Well, a female will spend 80% of her life either pregnant or raising dependent young. And so we had the launch of the predator removal study end of last year. And that's where they hired government hunters and trappers to come in and kill as many cats as possible in 6 units across the state. And so in the last few months, I've actually been getting more and more reports of orphaned kittens. And so this spring, I actually sat with one right after she'd been killed, and it was just awful. And so one of the things we have to remember, too, is with this really heavy, unregulated harvest that we have going on, we're actually opening the door to more conflicts with these cats, because 100%. All of a sudden you have younger cats out there, and they don't have mom to feed and teach them anymore. Those are the cats that are going to come into conflict with people because they're desperate, they're hungry, and they're going to do dumb things.
100%.
Let's take another break, come back, and talk about another thing that you guys take issue with, which is an ongoing study. And so we'll ask you, what isn't a study a good thing? I guess you're saying is, in this case, no. We'll talk about that in our mountain lion discussion following this break. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're talking about mountain lions on the program today. We're talking with Utah Mountain Lion Conservation founder Denise Peterson and Aaron Johnson, who's a houndsman and advocate for ethical cougar management. So before the break, we were talking about a couple of state laws which allowed for unlimited hunting of mountain lions. And you both are saying that you're seeing definite toll on mountain lions, that the population is decreasing in an alarming manner, I think, so what you guys are saying. So you're calling for a reversal of those laws, I would assume, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
To a kind of more moderate conservation plan for mountain lions. I want to focus on this. I was looking on your website, Denise, and you guys are calling for a study that's ongoing to be stopped? Is that what you
correct.
Wanted? So tell me
yes.
about this study and why you object to it.
So the predator removal study, WRI 7707, was launched at the end of last year. And so the goal of this study was to go in, have hired government hunters and trappers go in and lethally remove as many mountain lions as possible for at least 3 years. It was a minimum of 3 years. And that's in 6 hunt units across the state. So it's a pretty sizable portion of the state. And so they've been going in, originally setting lethal traps and snares all over the mountains. There's been some modification to that just during the bear season. But the goal is to kill every cat that they can find. Moms, kittens, everything. And so our concern with this is, there are lots of concerns with it, let's put it that way. But, you know, when you've got that many traps and snares out on the landscape, you're going to get in like non-target species in there with so many limited resources. You're going to have animals in there suffering for multiple days until somebody can get in there and check the cats, check the traps. But then also, you know, there's that concern about, you know, pets and animals getting stuck in these. But at the end of the day, we've done predator removal studies before. We have. And so we know that there's very limited success with them in the long term. So, yes, for a minute, we might see an increase in deer. But that ultimately will return to baseline or lower, because what can happen is they can then exceed carrying capacity, competing too much for limited resources, and ultimately that can lead to more deer dying. Plus, also, what that does is more deer opens the door to having the risk for chronic wasting disease spreading further and further through these herds. So as we're seeing mountain lion numbers decline, and I see opportunity for study here, we are actually seeing, you know, stories coming up in different parts of the state where they're saying, oh, chronic wasting is here now. We didn't have that before. And so in my mind, I'm like, well, okay, we've had heavy harvest of lions for the last few years. Is there something going on here that we really need to look at? So it's one of those things where we already know that excessive predator control is not really a good solution for, you know, growing deer. There are so many other things that influence deer survival: vehicle collisions, habitat loss, drought. So many different factors come into play. But like Aaron alluded to before, you know, killing more mountain lions, that, you know, the animals that they think eat deer, which obviously they do, you know, it seems like an easy fix to this problem. But, you know, at the end of the day, we know that it's not really going to achieve the desired outcomes in the long term.
Mm-hmm. I guess bottom line, what you're asking is look to scientists to...
Very much so.
For guidance 100%.
I think we've digressed in the management of mountain lions. We've gone backwards. I don't live in fairyland. I realize that the species that DWR wants to focus on is mule deer. They've stated that over and over and over. They want more mule deer, more mule deer, more mule deer. I'm in favor of that. I think everyone can be in favor of that. I'm not in favor of it, of losing other species. Mm-hmm. I would dare say and dare argue, and people could call me crazy, but maybe some of the other ungulates and humans have a bigger effect on the deer population than the predator. DWR pays out money to livestock owners that complain about deer eating their hay. They go kill those deer that are eating their hay. There's so many things that happen. Like if deer is the ultimate end all be all, we have to have more deer, we're doing things to deer, you know, like we're hunting, you know, however many tags there is, 50,000 tags a year. We want more deer. Let's only have 25,000 tags. Think how many deer that will save. Mm. And so it's as a conservationist, and I don't know how a conservationist can say any otherwise. If I want more of a species, then I'm willing to sacrifice killing that species. I won't go hunt it. I want to hunt deer, but I haven't killed a deer in Utah in 4 or 5 years. And the only thing in my freezer is deer and elk meat. Mm. You can have both, but you have to, you know, let's manage it science-based. Mm-hmm. Let's do the very best thing for mule deer in the state of Utah. We can't control winter when winter kills 60 or 70% of them, but the next fall we can control how many we kill. Mm-hmm. Let's decrease tags a lot. when that happens. I don't think that the DWR can show a track record of doing that. Mm-hmm. And I think those are just I'm not a biologist, but I think that's common sense. Mm-hmm. Other states have done that. Mm-hmm. You know, when we had the big winter kills, Wyoming stopped the deer hunt. Mm-hmm. You know, because they lost so many deer. Utah increases tags. Mm-hmm. You know, and so like that just doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm.
I wonder what's going to happen, too, with all these wildfires.
Wildfires, droughts. I mean, all of these things have a bigger effect on deer population than anything we as humans can do. Mm-hmm. Do we need to manage them? Yes. We live amongst them. We used to not. And I'm all for managing them. I'm all for hunting them. You know, they eat grass. So do elk, deer, sheep, cattle. When you have a drought, all of those animals are fighting for that same blade of grass. Mm-hmm. And I want beefsteak and I want all those type of things. We have to be good stewards of the land. Mm-hmm. We have to be good. And maybe as conservationist hunters, we have to realize and demand of our DWR, hey, when the deer population's low, let's kill fewer. Mm-hmm. I think most sportsmen could get on board with that. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, we don't. Mm-hmm. You know.
Just to follow up, Denise Peterson, you were talking about you're advocating stopping the study that you talked about. If you're advocating for science, wouldn't you want more science? You know,
we need to be asking the right questions, right? Okay. Because we've already looked, you know, pretty in-depth at predator removal. We have a pretty good sense that that doesn't work. But what if we took those funds and reinvested them in, say, wildlife crossing structures to help reduce roadway mortality? I think that would benefit deer far more than lethally removing lions, which actually can help keep herds healthier. Mm-hmm. So why not try to mitigate some of these areas of losses that are actually achievable too? And I think that the public would really get behind wildlife crossing structures because, like, as you're driving down the road, I don't know about you, but, like, I see so many dead deer and so many dead animals. Like, if we took the time to really research through the collar data that we have, that's so valuable. Where can we put these structures to help reduce deer loss? That could be a bigger gain in the long run. Plus, the public's going to benefit from that as well because the roadways are safer. We're mm-hmm. less likely to hit a deer or an elk or a bear or you name it. You know, so if we instead shifted the research, which is great, we always need more information, but shifted it to wildlife crossing structures or looking into like how much do mountain lions actually help control CWD? Let's answer those questions and then make decisions based on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we just have about a minute left. So much else we could talk about. I made reference to protecting your domestic animals, et cetera. You can go to the website, UtahMountainLion.org to find out more about that. So let me go to that. Where can people find out more about your organization?
Yes, UtahMountainLion.org is a great starting place. We are very active on Instagram and Facebook. We are an educational organization who's recently jumped into the realm of advocacy because of everything going on in the state. But we do a lot of community presentations and outreach and just talking to people about mountain lions and what's going on here. So if you want to have a conversation or have us come out, shoot me an email, info@utahmountainland.org. That'll come right to us. Hit us up on social media. We're active on there. And just reach out. We are very happy to come out and have a conversation.
All right. Any place you'd like to mention?
I would encourage people to do research and find out and make educated guesses and have educated opinions on what's happening. I really appreciate Denise and her organization. I'm a member of the Utah Houndsman Association. I'm a member of other sportsmen's groups as well, and ultimately a conservationist that wants to see wildlife populations thrive. Both ungulate and predator populations into the future for our kids.
All right. We'll leave the conversation there. We've been talking with Aaron Johnson. You just heard from him right there, houndsman and advocate for Exlo Cougar Management. Thanks for coming in.
You're welcome.
And our guests have also included Utah Mountain Lion Conservation founder Denise Peterson. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
And thanks, everybody, for listening to Access Utah.